Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 132 of the Blind Bargains Cast. I'm Joe, and JJ's not here. Well, my gosh, JJ is actually out and about. So I thought I would actually get in a good friend of mine who I haven't seen in person since Mark CSUN. Hey, buddy Brandon, how are you doing today,
Joe Steinkamp? Hello, sir. How are you?
It has been a long time, my friend, that we have spoken in front of a microphone.
It has. It's been how long? Well, let's see. We went to CSUN. We saw each other there. Yeah. But when was the last time I was actually on a podcast?
I am not sure.
I don't know. A lot longer ago than last week, anyway.
The formation of time and how it flows forwards and backwards is beyond my small computational ability to Hey, JJ is actually over in ATIA, as well as Washington Seminar, so he might have some audio or might not have some audio coming to us. We'll have to see how that works out.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also might have Patrick on board as well at a certain point in time within this podcast, so that way we'll have some more. Hey, that guy
That's
over
weird.
There. Hi, Patrick.
Good evening.
No, a third chair.
Hi.
Hi.
So we are not bereft of content. We do have a bunch of news, which we're going to push off again to 133 because I want JJ to be here for that. But there is some topics that we will get to that Buddy is, well, tailor-made to talk about because really he knows about some of this way better than I do. But before we do that, let me mention that this particular program is sponsored by Hims. Hims has already launched the BrailleSense Polaris, but what else will they launch this year? Maybe we'll learn at ATIA. Maybe we'll learn at CSUN. I know it'll be something really, really good. But in the meantime, learn all about the newly launched Polaris by reading the article at Access World written by Jamie Pauls or heading on over to hims-inc.com. So definitely check out the new BrailleSense Polaris. Buddy, I do not have a service animal, and Ricky has retired her service animal, so we don't have one currently in the house. But I thought you would be the perfect person to come on the program and talk about one of the things that is flying through the community. And
please
forgive us if this information is a little out of date by the time you hear this, because things are happening so fast right now. What's basically a story in flight as more people are starting to throw in their hats in the ring. Give us an idea. What did Delta Airlines just do, and why are service animal owners kind of concerned?
Okay, so Delta back on the 19th. On the 19th of January, Delta announced that they were going to implement new rules beginning on March the 1st, which they say are okay under the Air Carrier Access Act. There's some debate on that. But in any case, what they're going to do is they're requiring that everybody with either a service animal or an emotional support animal, which are two different things, submit a form, which you can download from their website and fill out, signed by your vet, good for a year. I think that they also said that a health certificate would suffice, basically saying that your animal is healthy and free of disease and so forth. And there's a lot of concern about that in the service dog using community. The reason they're doing this ostensibly is to cut down on the number of fraudulent claims for people who are bringing their untrained and undisciplined pets onto planes as and calling them emotional support animals, complete with doctor's notes saying that they need them for their peace of mind and to keep them from being too anxious on the airplane. Delta's had all the airlines have had a huge, huge uptick in the past couple of years of cases where people have fraudulently brought their untrained and undisciplined animals onto airplanes, and the animals have either been aggressive or have had inappropriate bodily functions on the airplane or barked incessantly and just sort of disturbed everything and all sorts of things that those of us with trained service animals know are just not acceptable things. Of course, you know, anybody's animal can have an accident, even on a plane, can happen. But most of us, you know, learn that when you're flying, you take precautions against that. For example, if I'm going to fly in the morning, I don't feed my dog breakfast. If I'm going to fly in the afternoon, I'll feed my dog like half right, to sort of cut down on those kind of possibilities. And of course, our dogs are socialized to act properly and unobtrusively and stay out of the way and generally stay out of people's spaces and that sort of thing. So the medical form thing is meant to curb some of the people who are faking, let's call it what it is, y'all, okay? They're faking a disability. If they're not faking a disability, they're faking that their dog has training or something that it does not have.
Improperly, fraudulently presenting themselves as having the ability to use that part of the law. And
right.
They're not doing that, correct?
To make things even more interesting, though, the Air Carrier Access Act actually does allow for the presence of emotional support animals, or I think they use that term. They might actually use a different term, but essentially pets whose purpose in life is to sort of keep their humans calm. Emotional support animals don't require training like that. I think they should. I really think that that they should, but they don't. So I don't think that the additional medical requirement is going to really help. Anyone can get this form and fill it out. It's an extra step that's not going to really solve the problem.
No, and how does it stop the woman who, right before we came in to record, as what usually happens is I look at the news, and United refused a woman and her emotional support peacock.
Right.
I'm not kidding. She bought a seat for herself and the bird and was going to bring her peacock on board a United flight as an emotional animal. You know, it's extremely weird to say the least, but at the same time, it's really confusing the way that we approach this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The rules are nothing if not confusing, because you've got the ADA standard. Okay. And that applies to public entities and places of public accommodation and lodging and workplaces and things like that. You've got the Fair Housing Act, which applies to, well, housing, which has even different regulations and allows for emotional support animals. And then you've got the Air Carrier Access Act, which has even yet another set of definitions, none of which really align.
Play into Homeland, because Homeland has a little bit to say about what happens in the air. That's why there are air marshals on planes.
Yeah, I mean, none of these definitions for service animals and so forth really align. I think that would be a great first step. Here's the problem that I have. Well, by the way, there's this cartoon that somebody posted on Facebook, and I shared it to my timeline, complete with the description, which I stole blatantly from her. But the cartoon shows a guy with somebody's emotional support dog, like, attached and chewing on his leg, with the dog's owner having her back turned, totally unconcerned, totally oblivious, and they're standing at the Delta counter, and the Delta counter agent says, "Not to worry, sir. All animals who fly Delta are healthy and have had all of their shots." that pretty much sums it up right there. Here's the problem that I have with the whole thing. Well, there are a couple. Specifically with this, they're requiring that this paperwork be provided to them 48 hours before you fly, and then it's good for a year. Okay, so you don't fly for a while, and you have a family emergency, and you have to fly today. Can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's way different than, say, getting your pre-check from TSA, which lasts 3 years.
Right, but I mean, like, the first time you do it, you know, you if you have a service dog and they don't have your paperwork, guess what? Starting March 1st, you could be stuck on the ground if you have to fly at the last minute and haven't given them your paperwork. The other thing is, according to their new rules, if you have a service dog, you have to check in with a gate agent at the counter. You can't take advantage of things like curbside check-in or online pre-check, you know, where you can go online and print your boarding pass and all that. Can't do it.
Yep.
Can't do it anymore. So it's kind of a discriminatory policy. And unfortunately, it won't do what it was intended to do. More generally, though, my problem with these kinds of things is this. The laws are already on the books to handle animals that are not under their handler's control, that are not appropriately socialized, aggressive, and disruptive.
Sure.
Any dog, whether it's a service dog or not, if it's not appropriately behaved, businesses and guest airlines have the authority to ask that that animal be removed, and then the person can come back without the animal and be served as normal. But bottom line is that, behaviorally speaking, if an animal, whether it's a service animal or not, if it's my guide dog who is like sort of lunging at the end of its leash and snarling at somebody and, you know, it takes a chunk out of a kid's leg or whatever, if that happens, business would be well within its rights to have my dog removed from the premises.
Sure.
Unfortunately, that isn't happening. That's not happening. These guys are not exercising their rights, and I really have a problem with having sort of the burden of proving my innocence, my compliance with the law, having the whole burden of that being put on my shoulders when other people are not exercising the rights that they currently have, when I'm not doing anything wrong. I have a real problem with that, just sort of on a personal level. Sure. So when people are asking for, well, we should have an ID, or we should have certifications, or we should have a mandatory state or federal issued ID saying that this is a service dog and it's been certified for, I have a real problem with that because, again, that's putting more of the onus on me to prove that I'm not doing anything wrong, where the people who are empowered to actually exercise the rights to have the animals that are causing the problems removed are not doing it.
Well, and it doesn't curb the people who are abusing the system. It's no different than the handicapped parking space.
Oh, absolutely. They're going to keep doing it.
Right. So if a guy drives up in his Porsche or a really low-lying car, like a very old Corvette, you know, which you could literally have to step up to get onto the curb, you know, it, right. The question begins to, it comes to the forefront of, wait a minute, if you've got a back issue, why are you driving this vehicle? Maybe it was, this is how it happened. There is fraudulent situations with the handicapped parking spaces in a lot of situations, but that's not enforced. So yeah. Why is this going to be any different? And again, I agree with you. Why is the burden coming down onto the handicapped individual? Now, have you seen the statements that have been put out by ACB, NFB, Guide Dogs?
Yes.
You know, various organizations.
Yes. I've seen a few of them. By the way, one thing that I also want to emphasize here is that nobody is required to disclose what the nature of their disability is. And it's really not our place. It's not our place to call people out on that. It's like if somebody's doing it, you know, if somebody's abusing the system, it's really not our place to call them out on it because maybe they're not, right?
Hypothetically, under ADA, you do have to disclose in order to receive appropriate services or to be served in the best way possible. So they might not disclose to the general public. But hypothetically, again, I'm no way a lawyer, but the way that my interpretation of it is you still have to present in order to have proper.
Well, if you want an accommodation, you have to ask for the accommodation, certainly.
Correct. You have to declare one way or another.
But, well, for example, in the case of service dogs, they can't ask you what the nature of your disability is when you come in with a service dog. They can ask is it a service dog required to mitigate your disability? And they can ask you, what tasks or work has your dog been trained to perform? The key there being trained, if there's not a trained task, it isn't a service dog. It's as simple as that. But we're back to, again, as the standard for when enforcement needs to come to bear, we're back to behavior.
Right.
In my case, like if I ran into somebody with a dog that had a service dog, actually there's not even any sort of requirement that there be any ID or jacket or anything. But if, let's say I run into somebody with a dog in a store, if that dog is behaving appropriately, isn't bothering me or my dog or anything, then I don't care. It's not my business. If they're faking, then okay, they're faking. But if it's not bothering me, maybe they're not faking. It's not my call to make. But the minute that dog sort of becomes inappropriate, then it becomes my problem and it becomes everybody else's problem. And, you know, sort of the business, the people that are tasked with sort of keeping order in the business should then step in and have the animal removed. ID, certification, service dog or not. If my guide dog were in that role, they'd be absolutely well within their rights to say, okay, you got to go. And on the flip side of that, you know, people say, well, you know, my dog is distracted by other dogs, and you know, the fake service dogs really cause a problem with that. Well, guess what? If they weren't fake service dogs and they actually do provide a service for somebody else, and the other dog is doing nothing wrong, guess what? That distraction problem is on you to solve. It's not their problem. It's yours.
I remember you and I having this conversation personally in 2014. I'd come back from the Blinded Veterans Association, and you and I had talked a little bit about how this was starting to grow because of the definition of service animal was changing. And I specifically remember there was a gentleman who I actually met flying up to BVA in Reno 2014, and totally unrelated to the convention. He wasn't attending. It was just that was his home. And he had a service animal that would stand behind him in order for him to feel comfortable in public places. Like if he was in the grocery store, he suffered PTSD, and the dog would act as a buffer between him and the person behind him. So he would feel less likely to be violent. And it was fascinating to me because, of course, my thought of a service animal was the classic definition that you and I both know. And I think that's where a lot of people still come from, is that that is a service animal, is a seeing eye dog. Those two terms are synonymous, right?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of America is still kind of working their way through the idea that it's not a seeing eye dog, you know, for lack of the current term, but there's a lot of people who would still say that term.
Right.
And I think that's kind of weird. But where I'm going with this is, if someone has a service animal, let's say that it is a comfort animal or, you know, something that helps to rest, and that animal doesn't have the proper training or acts out or does like some of the behavior you mentioned, then that impacts you tangentially, right? Because when you walk up with an animal, whatever bad situation they had previously, you're then lumped in with them for good or bad, even though, like you said, your animal has gone through all the proper training. You have papers. You know you're good.
I actually don't have papers.
Okay.
I don't have papers. I trained my own, but the point is, training is the key. But again, behavior. I don't care how. Look, last year I was at a conference with about 80 to 100 other guide dogs. Uh-huh. Okay, mine was the only one that was owner trained. Everybody else at the conference got their guide dog from a program. All the programs were pretty well represented. There was a dog there that attacked at least one person, leaving an injury on her dog. Menaced two other teams at least, you know, was quite aggressive. And I don't know what was ever done about it. Nothing substantive. The hotel would have been well within their rights to ask her to leave in that case, but they didn't. But that dog was trained. The handler had a school-issued ID.
Because, I mean, but, you know, we had this conversation roughly on this year in AT about how some people got the IRA service and then they used it less than they thought. And I had said kind of remotely to Chansey, I said, this sounds like the classic guide dog conversation where some people say that they want a service animal and then they don't actually go out enough to keep that dog within training. They don't practice. The dog starts to lose their edge, as would anybody who was trained to do something and then sits under a desk all day or just hangs out in their dog bed. It's an interesting thing, right? Because it's like owning a braille display. You have to remind people sometimes that needs to be cleaned. Right. We don't take the proper measures sometimes to make sure that we're providing care for the tools that we use, whether it be a braille display. We're making sure that the animal is up to snuff and getting practice and getting, you know, practice with you. Because I always kind of feel a little bad for the animal who only goes out every year for convention or goes to church every Sunday, right? You know, because that's part of it. Is how can you put responsibility on the owner or the dog or the school if you yourself are not being a part of that contract with that dog and making sure that everything is working accordingly to make sure that he's doing or she's doing the best job they can for you? I don't know. That's a real interesting quandary.
It's a really good point, though, and like I say, given that, given the absolute breadth of things that a dog can be trained to do, behavior has to be the standard, because there's no way you can say, well, you know, this dog can be a service dog, but this dog can't be a service dog because it doesn't do some traditional service task. But dogs can be trained to do a lot of different things. You can shape an innate ability in a dog to do some amazing things. You can, like, if you have a dog that has the natural ability, and this is a real thing, but if you have a dog that has the ability, for example, to detect a seizure coming on with it, you know, I've discovered that my dog does such and such, and then like 20 minutes later I have a seizure. And if that becomes a really reliable thing, you can shape and mold that behavior so that the dog then detects that you have a seizure, does whatever it does to alert you, you know, leads you to somewhere safe where you can have the seizure, or like presses a button to make a like an emergency call on one of those kind of phones, or, you know, any number of things. But dogs are really amazing in their capacity to do a lot of different things. And there's just no way to cover all of that. So behavior really has to be, in my opinion, has to be the thing. And unfortunately, this new policy from Delta just doesn't cover behavior at all. And that's where the problem is. So as far, you asked me earlier, though, about responses from the other organizations, and I've seen a few. Kudos to all these guys for actually stepping up and drafting a response. But I got to say, I don't think I've seen the ACB one. The NFB one, there was one from the NFB National Office, and there was one from NAGDU, which is the Guide Dog Division. The NAGDU one was pretty strong, and it went through points very logically. The NFB one just sounded very stridently NFB. We're not going to take this sort of thing lying down, all that sort of thing, you know, the sort of response that we usually give. Very
strident. The D. Snyder answer from Twisted Sister, we're not going to take it, is the exactly. classic line that's, yes.
And as far as responses from guide dog schools, I really thought the response from Guide Dog Foundation was absolutely spot on. It was probably the best one that I've seen.
I agree. It was very forthright in its approach and laying out a lot of the concerns in a lot of ways, and very respectful, I thought, as well.
Yeah, I really like that. Janine, kudos to Janine Stanley and her crew over there.
It's something that's going to be changing. I am not a guide dog user. Ricky has been. You are a current one. You were always on top of these things, and I thought you were the perfect person to bring in to talk about this. So I appreciate that. It is going to be something that we'll have to keep an eye on, because like I said, at the time of this recording, this is where we're at. So we'll have to see what happens in a couple of weeks, because if March 1st is the deadline, that's right around the corner from this recording.
Yeah.
So a lot of people run into that when they're flying off to CSUN.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I can tell you that two things. First of all, that NFB, I just saw a note today that NFB and NAGDU are meeting with Delta on Friday to have talks and discussions and so forth. And who knows what's going to come of that? Maybe nothing. Maybe they'll reach an impasse, but maybe something. I'm sure that other organizations are going to send representatives to have meetings with Delta as well. Maybe eventually we'll come to a meeting of the minds. We got a month. Hopefully things will change, but things will, whatever they do, if they do change, they'll change quick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the beauty of the airline industry.
Yeah. The other thing is that apparently, you know, all the people that are saying, well, just don't fly Delta. Guess what? Americans considering similar rules.
If one does it, then they all will consider it, especially if it's a matter of security.
Yeah.
It starts one direction and then goes. And don't forget, you know, with American, then you're talking United and a bunch of things, because all of them own different companies and different branding. Chances are, though, Spirit, they'll probably just make you pay for the lint brush to clean the dog afterwards once when it leaves the plane. Good old Spirit Airlines.
I'm a little concerned about American, though, given what happened to Sue Martin last year.
Yeah, well, some would say the same about United.
Uh-huh.
And kind of their representation of how they treat customers was under very much the same kind of problematic issues that happened, too. But yeah, Sue's was a case that was immediately overshadowed by others because it was her news, and then the guy got like beaten up on the United flight.
Right,
some other stuff happened.
There was another guy too. There was a guy that was in a wheelchair that was on an American flight,
and they
made him get off, and they escorted him off the plane, and they left him sitting there like for an hour waiting for his wheelchair or something.
Yep. Yep. That all happened around the same time. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting time as far as that's concerned. We'll keep an eye on this, but we've got more to talk about. Buddy's got some hardware that we're going to talk about.
I've got so many toys.
And then if we got some time and room, we'll stick Patrick in the middle of all of this. So much more to come up here on Blind Bargains Cast 132. We'll be right around the corner with Buddy again to talk about hardware in just a minute.
RailSense Polaris is shipping. The future is now. Check out the first Google-certified future-proof note-taker with no touchscreen required. For more information, visit www.hims-inc.com.
One of the other reasons why I brought Buddy on board is not just because it's been a long time and we're good friends, but he also has all these new wonderful toys that he's been amassing, and I thought, man, we'll need a whole hour just to get Buddy to talk about all the stuff he's got, and I'm really not kidding. Buddy, where do you want to start? What's your new favorite toy?
I'll tell you what. My new favorite toy. Well, it's tough because I just love toys. He with the most toys wins and all that sort of thing. Uh-huh. I've got lots of Braille. Yeah. Let's see. We can go chronological, I guess. But the first thing is, last year during the summer conventions, View Plus announced, and I'm not sure how prominently they announced it, but they announced a sale. And when Luis told me about this sale, I'm like, Luis, you're kidding me. Stop that. There's no way they're doing that. There is no way they're doing that. He said, yeah, there is. Call and talk to Dan there at the View Plus. Tell him that Dan mentioned this special and you just see, I was right. They're doing this thing. And what they were doing was they really want people to have more access to more Braille. So they took the View Plus Columbia, which is an Interpoint embosser, uses tractor feed paper, prints at about 100 characters a second, Interpoint. Retails for like $3,500, and they were selling it for $12.
Ooh.
Yeah, so you can imagine my surprise Luis told me that. Well, sure enough, I got in on that deal. I think they're still having a special on the Columbia. I think it's 15 now and not 12, but still, it's a lot less than 35.
That's a heck of a deal.
Heck of a deal.
More than half off.
Heck of a deal. And let me tell you, I do a little bit of Braille transcription. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. One of the things that I do is the one thing that will be probably as close as I'll ever get to going into space. There's a guy up here at Edinburgh University. He's an astronomer. Some time ago, he had a blind student, and he started working with blind people in astronomy and science. And then he branched out and like worked with K-12 science teachers that wanted to do more things to integrate their blind kids into the science classes. And now he's doing, for a while he's been doing these little books that he's been doing in partnership with NASA. They're getting a feel for, getting a feel for the solar system, and there's getting a feel for Mars, and there was most recently getting a feel for eclipses, and now we've got getting a feel for lunar craters. And so I get to run off all the labels that go on the covers of all of these books, it's kind of awesome just because it's like, cool, it's space. And then I've got these books that have the tactile diagrams in them. And the first ones had a CD, like a CD-ROM in them with MP3 files and text files and things so you could have supplementary information. Now they've got QR codes on the cover. So it says scan here for text and audio, and you point your phone at it and it, finds a QR code and brings up a website and you can read it. It's all high tech.
And they can more dynamically update it. So
and they can more dynamically update it.
If Pluto was a planet this week and not a planet next week, you're good.
Right. They can. By the way, Dr. Hurd is definitely a yes. Pluto is a planet guy.
he's on the planet side. Gotcha.
He's on the planet side of the house, and I'm with him on that. By the way, I think Pluto is definitely a. So for a while, I have been custodian of the Juliet Pro 60. Embosser that our local, I can't stand the name. The name makes me just kind of throw up in my mouth a little. The Sight Center of Northwest Pennsylvania, which they changed name to from like Vision and Blindness Resources, which was changed from the Erie Center for the Blind. We got less and less blindness, and now we've got no blindness. But anyway, The Erie Sight Center of Northwest Pennsylvania. I am now the custodian of the Juliet Pro 60, which is now getting a bit long in the tooth. It's at least 16, 17 years old, perhaps a little more. I mean, it's old enough that it doesn't have any USB. It's parallel or serial or bust. So, yeah, I've got it on a Windows 7 computer with a USB to parallel adaptery cable. And amazingly, it still works. But eventually, they're not going to be able to service this thing anymore. And it's going to, you know, so I thought this would be a great time for me to get a Braille printer that is modern and will hopefully be serviceable for a while. So I got the Columbia. And
is it quieter than the Juliet?
No, I wouldn't say it's quieter. I don't think that. I don't think I've really met
not
a
without
quiet
getting
Braille
one of those
printer.
Big,
I mean, it's
like cases.
Yeah,
that you
yeah, you have to like totally
it.
Get yeah. the acoustic cabinet and all that. But no, it. Yeah, and at that price, the acoustic cabinet is probably going to be almost as much as the embosser. But
yeah, just about as much as if you had bought the embosser by itself, almost. It just
but it's
depends.
Interesting because yeah, it does sound different. And, you know, it sounds a bit like the Index Basic D. It sounds a bit like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and the Braille is kind of similar to that. You know how enabling printers have very nice defined sharp Braille.
Well, that's exactly where I was going next because some of that diamond Braille on Tiger and View Plus stuff, some feel like it's too sharp, like it's almost too pronounced at times, or at least it is initially.
Yeah, no, the Braille that comes out of the Columbia is pretty nice. It's a little bit flatter, sort of like what comes out of the Index. So it's more like European Braille, which is a little, little less sharp than, say, Library of Congress Braille, but it's very nice. It's very readable. And the graphics that you can make with this thing are just amazing. I mean, they're very defined.
View Plus has done for years and done well.
Yeah, they really do. They really do graphics nicely. And the Braille, like I say, it makes nice Braille. I'm still trying to get all the margins right. But once I get the margins right, actually, I printed something off from Word through their sort of plugin. And it did a pretty nice job. I also have been playing a little bit with Braille Blaster, which is a free Braille translator from APH, and it's you can get it at brailleblaster.org.
Wait, what? You mean APH did that? Oh my goodness. Nobody ever mentioned that. Like six times right. a day. Oh yeah.
In their Twitter feed is what Patrick is talking about. They in one day they had a lot of tweets about Braille Blaster.
Well, the funny thing is that it's been in beta, quote unquote beta, for ages. And of course, now they're saying, yep, this is really the year that we're going to do the things that we were going to do last year. We're going to do them this year. But anyway, I've been playing with
next year too.
Yeah, probably. But I've been playing with that and it actually works pretty well. It's a, you know, pretty nice little, especially for free. What do you want? But it works really well with this embosser too.
Are you using the new Duxbury?
I am not using the new Duxbury. I'm too poor for the new Duxbury.
Okay. Well, I gotcha.
Yeah, but I gotta say, this embosser is large desktop-sized, printer-sized, and a lot lighter than, I mean, like those enabling printers are built like freaking tanks, man. I mean, like you could.
Yeah, they are.
You could like hurt somebody with one. This thing is maybe half the weight, and it's made out of a lot of plastic, but it even so, it feels sturdy. It's not a metal tank like the enabling ones, but it's...
No, and you're not going to move it from room to room, but it at least feels solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it absolutely feels solid. It doesn't feel cheap, but I think that it's fair to say that it also looks very professional and...
Yeah, it looks like kind of the Epsons when I saw it at a convention. I was very impressed by the styling and the coloring. So it would not look out of order in a office environment, unlike some embossers we've had in the past, which took on unique colors. I mean, not Braille Note green or yellow kind of colors, but definitely you knew that they weren't a printer when somebody visual would walk into the room. Right. What is that? You know?
And the other thing is, the other nice thing is the way that they've got their tractor feed arrangement arranged. You don't end up wasting a piece of paper when you use it. Let's see. Open this lid. Okay, yeah. So you've got the tractor feeds in the back, and then the paper comes out the front, which really makes a lot of sense, right? But yeah, you know, a lot of these, well, like, you know, you could end up either wasting a piece of paper at the beginning or wasting a piece of paper at the end.
The end, yeah.
And I don't think that's going to be an issue so much. Like, when I hit the end of on the Juliet Pro, when I hit the end of a, and it might be a thing on this one, I don't know, I'll have to see, but when you hit the last sheet of paper on the stack, if you don't want to waste it, you like stop the print like one page before the end and then right. turn it around and feed it back through. So then you've got one page that's sort of backwards from the rest.
Yeah. That is, now, do you find that the speed is comparable to the Juliet? Do you
race them?
Do you start a long document and then go?
Yeah, no, I haven't really printed anything too long, but I really need to print up the Braille Me manual, which we'll talk about the Braille Me in a minute. But
okay.
I haven't done that, but I'll tell you, the Juliet has always been a little bit cantankerous, and they warned me about that when I got it, in that sometimes right. the tractor feed mechanism slips a little bit. So
yeah,
if the paper gets a little bit out of line, then, you know, you start printing on the perforation and you have like a big old space at the top or a big old space at the bottom or whatever. So right, I don't really feel comfortable printing more than about 20 pages at a time with the thing.
Gotcha.
I haven't seen that with this one, but then again, like I said, I haven't really tried to print anything too long, but I think I'm going to have to.
Yeah, just to take it around the town to see how it works out. And the mechanism, if I remember correctly, is different on the Columbia, so it shouldn't have that slippage. I mean, a lot of that happens over time, just about on anything that's using some type of feed mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I can see. I don't remember what the estimated Braille printing speed, Braille per page speed was. But of course, your mileage would vary no matter what, because again, it's a matter of what you're feeding it, how you're feeding it, the speed at which the computer takes the information and gives it to the Braille embosser. On and on and on. But it's
the quality of Braille you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You mean the mushy, sort of mushy, and holy cow, you might be neuropic? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly right. I mean, like, and they actually have settings like that. It's like, you know, draft or, you know,
right.
good, better, best, whatever things. So yeah, exactly that. Oh, one kind of interesting thing about it is that it does have speaking menus that were done with recorded voice prompts. However, of course, there's a however. You have to hear them, you have to plug in an amplified speaker. So if you don't plug anything in, you can still use it. It has enough little beeps and boops to help you navigate it without. But if you want the spoken menus, you have to plug in an amplified
dongles.
Speaker. Yeah. Have to plug
you need
in
a Bluetooth speaker. Dongle. That's what you need there, buddy.
There you go. Yeah. that's what I need. Yeah. But no, it has to be amplified
totally.
Because there's no electronics in there at all for just a passive speaker. Like if you plugged in headphones.
Well, Patrick
or just
will figure out something.
Yeah.
What's up, Patrick?
You know, good news. Teeny tiny amplified speakers are cheap.
Agreed. Hey, if they can put USB sound cards in a USB cable now, with an earphone on the end of it. You know, here's your 3.5 jack on the end of this USB cord.
Right, right.
We live in an amazing world. And those are like Amazon basics practically now. It's
just
like
about.
Crazy. Yeah. When we used to think about all the things we had to do to get a deck talk.
right.
Yikes. Or triple talk if we're really lucky. Okay, so that's the Columbia. Now,
that's the
moving
Columbia.
Down the menagerie, what else you got?
Okay, so the next thing I've got is Braille Me. Braille Me is a 20-cell Braille display that was built by a startup in India called InnoVision. InnoVision, actually, I first found out about this thing right at the end of 2016. They wrote to the NVDA email list and said, hey, can someone give us some direction on writing a driver for a new Braille display? And I wrote them back and I said, wait, what? New Braille display? New Braille display, new stuff. So we started chatting and they had ambitious plans to release this thing in like the summer of last year and then it slipped. And last I heard was that they were still planning to release it at the end of January. I haven't looked at their website to see where they are on that. One friend of mine did look at their pre-order form because they do have a form for pre-order. And from what she was saying, it sounds like what they're trying to do. And I don't know, this sounds like a thing with some companies. I don't know, maybe it's a cultural thing, but it sounded like they were trying to do market research at the same time as they were taking pre-orders. And she just really didn't like that. And I can really kind of understand that.
Yeah, if you don't know the market, though, if you don't have a lot of experience, I mean, that's very similar to Envision AI, the mm-hmm. kind of quote-unquote competitor to Seeing AI. taking kind of that weird informal survey when you go to use the app for the first time. And then they brought up another one, which was, how much do you feel like paying for this service? There are a lot of people who are good intentioned, but they might not be familiar with our community, and they right. A, don't want to offend us, but B, want to try really and market the best way they can. And sometimes it just comes off kind of weird or off-putting.
Yeah. And I don't think it's meant that way at all.
No.
But at any rate, because I was able to see an earlier prototype and gave some feedback, they gave me the chance to buy one ahead of the pack, sort of jump the queue. So
Alpha testing, not beta testing, but actual production run?
It's a production unit, they tell me. And I got it right before Christmas. I mean, like right before Christmas.
And it was funny because we were playing with the Google Home and you were playing with a Braille display. It was really
I've got
vicariously Google, through one another.
Right, and I've got Google things too.
Oh yeah, your tick and all. I forgot about that.
We'll get to that too. But the
we'll have to get to that. Another episode. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, you were talking about the BrailleMe.
BrailleMe, yeah. So I got it, and it's really interesting the compromises that they made versus the compromise that Orbit Research made in the Orbit Reader 20, which I hope to see sometime this year.
Sure.
We also hope to see it sometime last year.
Without a lottery involved.
But anyway, for $399 retail price, I ended up paying, after shipping from India and PayPal fees, a bit more than that. But you get a 20-cell Braille display with 6-dot Braille.
Okay. USB connected, not Bluetooth?
No, it does. It has Bluetooth.
All right.
It has Bluetooth too. It has both.
Okay.
Like I say, the compromise that they made was that they made it a 6-dot cell instead of an 8-dot cell. People are wondering about how noisy it is. Yeah, there it is. It's sitting about a foot away from my microphone. So it's not quiet, but, you know, maybe kind of like
as loud as the Orbit.
It's comparable. I think it's comparable to the Orbit, but since the refresh is instantaneous, you just get a click.
Yeah.
All at once. And
how did the pins feel? Do they feel like they pop right up?
The pins pop right up. It's okay. Well, before I want to talk a little
before
bit
about
yeah,
okay.
The sound level. I would say the sound level is, I don't know, maybe it's like the, remember the old IBM keyboards?
Yeah.
The clicky keyboards? Yeah. I'm thinking kind of like that. Maybe a little
like
less.
A DOS keyboard, a hardware keyboard.
Yeah, like the DOS.
If you're into mechanical keyboards, you would be okay with this noise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably not great for a recording studio.
I would not think that you would want to use it in a presentation environment.
But I think for most people and most purposes, it's fine. And I want to address 6-dot Braille too. When they mentioned that it was 6-dot Braille, I heard a lot of, well, you know, the modern standard is 8-dot Braille, and, you know, what are you going to do about, you know, I think more people think they need 8-dot Braille than actually need 8-dot Braille, and I'm not discounting that.
I would say in education settings, especially when you're just starting out or learning, or maybe you're in an education center,
mm-hmm.
I think it's good to be exposed to it, but I see where you're going before you go there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm certainly not discounting the people that actually need 8-dot Braille. Thinking people in computer and technical fields and so forth, but most of us are going to read English. We're going to read things for pleasure. We're going to read menus, and we're going to do things that don't require 8-dot Braille most of the time. So,
heck, growing up in school, I was 6-dot. I mean, it was 8-dot was weird as I grew older. Not to say that
weird.
Yeah, that's not to say that people shouldn't be exposed. Again, I think it's a good thing, you know, but.
I agree with you.
A lot of the basic grade one,
life,
grade two readers who are just beginning, you know, kind of thing.
Well, in day-to-day life, I think most of us are not going to miss those extra 2 dots. I really think that most of us won't miss it. That won't mean to say that all of us won't.
You know, one of the strangest things is to be in a new building and actually run into 8-dot Braille on signage.
I've never seen 8-dot Braille on signage.
I've seen it on an elevator once, and I forget where I saw it on a sign.
Really?
It was just kind of strange because I didn't expect to encounter it there, because most signage that I've run into in public places is 6, mm-hmm. especially on elevators. But some new stuff has actually been 8, like they've worked with someone or an organization has assisted them, and I've seen it. It's rare, but it's crazy when you see it. But yeah, it's one of those things where I think – having access maybe half the battle. So all in said and done, $399, they're probably pricing it for the Indian market, or are they trying to position themselves for the United States?
They're looking for dealers everywhere.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that they really want to go global with it. But at a price point like that, going up against the Orbit, really, I think having more than one option in that sort of
arena
in that price category is fantastic. It can only be good for us. You were asking about...
What did you drive it with? Well, yeah, go ahead and answer that, but yeah, I want to know what also you drove it with.
Okay, so you were asking about the dots, and my particular unit has a couple of dots that kind of go down a little bit easier than they should.
Okay.
They're going to replace it, so you know, I made them aware of the problem, and I think it was just peculiar to my unit. In general, though, the dots are somewhere between the Orbit and your traditional displays, which means that you can push them down, and they'll push down and then pop right back up, but they're a bit firmer than the traditional ones, but they're not the quote-unquote signage braille quality of the Orbit. What did I drive it with? I'm actually working it with NVDA. Okay. They've got a driver for NVDA. They've got support for Android, and they're working on support for iOS and Mac, and I think JAWS, but I don't have any sort of timetable on when any of those things will come.
Okay.
Ergonomically, I really like the keyboard on this thing. It's got the keyboard. It's got like back to front, you've got the braille display with sort of panning buttons on the left that move by line, panning buttons on the right that move by display length. Below the display is a row of cursor routing keys,
which okay, all right.
do what they're supposed to, right? And then you've got an ergonomic right. braille keyboard, 6-dot braille keyboard, back on the left, enter on the right, space in the middle. You know, it's slightly curved, so like I say, it's an ergonomic braille keyboard, and it feels very comfortable compared to the Alva BC640 that's sitting right here.
It's
lots better. The Alva, I don't really
I was
like
going to say that,
much.
Or the classic handy take, you're soaking in it, you know, your fingers downward kind of position kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's somewhere between that, but it's not as heavy as an Elba, you know, where it's made out of steel kind of thing.
Right. No, it's definitely plastic, but it feels sturdy.
Okay.
There are some similarities with the Orbit in that it's got an onboard braille reader, so you can, you know, put your library books on it and read them on an SD card.
Oh, good. Okay, so built-in storage of a kind.
Built-in storage, just, yeah, same kind of deal. Connects USB or Bluetooth. They claim a 10-hour battery life. So very similar. Like I say, the compromises that they made are different. Like I say, 6-dot braille is probably the biggest one. Where Orbit decided to go 8-dot braille, their refresh rate isn't as fast. It's still plenty fast enough for a good braille reader. But, you know, y'all have heard the podcasts with the, you know, sort of panning left to right that right. it does. Some people say that it sounds like a rain stick. It kind of does.
yeah, it does.
And no cursor routing keys.
I would say it sounds more like a bike.
Well, that too, like you put, cards in the spokes, you put all your baseball cards in the spokes and you're going down the road. Yeah, that's about right.
But no cursor routing keys on the Orbit.
I would love for you to get an Orbit and do a shootout between these two.
I would love to do that. Maybe I'll be able to pull that off once the Orbit's available.
Right.
But yeah, they compromised on the refresh rate and no, it didn't come with a case. They're working on a case. Okay. I pointed them at Executive Products, but they're also working on a case in-house, and they said that I may be getting one at some point. If I do, I'll definitely report back on it. Another interesting thing that they told me was that they're considering wireless, and I'm not sure how that would work in actual practice, but it's funny because on the bottom of the case, on the left, sort of left front corner of the bottom, there's this indentation that looks very much like a thumb drive should go in it. And so I said, this looks like a thumb drive should go into it, true or false? And they said, well, you know, we had plans for that, and we decided that we might do something a little bit differently with it. And they're thinking about wireless at some point, which, like I say, I'm wondering how that would play out if they would...
Well, you know, in the Indian market, it would be huge because a lot of people use their cell phones as their primary computer. I mean, outside the United States, it's not uncommon for a lot of African as well as EU countries to start working their way distancing themselves from the traditional Windows-based or Mac-based PC. It is all about the mobile. So that makes a lot of sense. If they could find a network system or do a SIM card that they could recognize, then do simple stuff. That'd be awesome. You know, hook up to whatever library service you want or cloud service, and just have enough resident memory to pull down the file you need or want to work with and then upload it back. Yeah, I could see that. Look at what Google's doing with Project Fi in other countries. So yeah, speaking of which, I want to get to the Pixel, but you were really excited about a certain product in San Diego, so much so that you called me on my phone and told me I should come over to the booth. And you were so excited about it that I said, okay, you know what? Why don't you do this interview? And you did, and you got the Tap. Tell me, is it all it was cracked up to be? Were you just as excited as you were in March 2017 about the Tap?
You know, I still am, but I haven't gotten it. Apparently, shipping has slipped a little bit, and so they're shipping at the beginning of February. So I don't have it yet.
Oh no!
Unfortunately, but I'm still waiting for it.
Okay.
Now, one thing that they have added to it that wasn't in the initial thing was that apparently now it is a keyboard and mouse, so you can control a mouse with your thumb if you so desire.
Okay. So you're just kind of doing a Harry Potter with your fingers kind of thing, or are you flicking? What's the idea?
I'm not sure how the mouse part works.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll check back on that. Yeah. All right. Not a problem. I'll make a note here. We got to have you back to talk about the Tap. They'll be at convention, I'm pretty sure. So we'll definitely get some idea about that, but you'll get it before then. But you got a Pixel. So
I got
in
a
the
Pixel.
Long run.
I got a Pixel.
Podcast that Buddy and I famously are used to being on the other sides of this conversation. Buddy of Triple Click Home fame and Joe and JJ of That Android Show fame. So we are known for talking about things that are probably commonplace to older listeners, but to newer listeners of this very podcast. Buddy got an Android phone and Joe was just tripped out to no belief because Joe was rocking the iPhone 8 Plus. Buddy.
This is like opposite sketch, man.
I know. This is bizarro world. This is not the way it's supposed to be. Tell me, how did you come to this decision and how are you adapting to your life in Android?
Well, I got to say to all my loyal Triple Click Home peeps, that I'm not abandoning the iPhone because, I've got my life on the iPhone, right? So and I'm very used to it. And so it's still my primary phone. I got the Pixel 2 mostly because I got a killer deal on it. Verizon was running this special where basically over 2 years you get it for like $15 a month, which is sort of $200 or $300 off of retail, something crazy like that. So I said, well, what the hell? I need a second thing for work anyways. I'll get an Austin number so that it's all consistent with my primary employer and why not? Now it'll give me an excuse to play with Android. And I'll tell you what, there are some things that I still haven't quite worked out. For example, I had to actually call in on an actual phone to set up my voicemail greeting. I wasn't sure how to do that. There are some things that I still have to work out, but...
Was that Android or Verizon, do you think?
I don't know, because I couldn't find a button in the voicemail tab of the phone app to set up the voicemail greeting.
Okay.
So I don't know. But I'll tell you what, TalkBack has come a long way. It feels snappy. They got rid of some of the ridiculous Hanna-Barbera cartoon earcons.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like the last time I saw TalkBack, it was doing like the Flintstones door opening and closing sounds.
Yeah. Right? And it sounded like you had that child xylophone that you would pull a string and it go ding, 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 when you would go down the hall. JJ and Steve Nutt would use the weird earcon things. That was one of the first things I would turn off when I updated my phone. So,
yeah, no, they
didn't need it.
They fixed that,
which is awesome.
There are things that actually about Android that I really liked that they did right in the beginning. Things like haptic feedback when you pressed something or when you encountered something, you know, your phone would vibrate. I really like that. And when Apple sort of picked up on that when they got the Taptic engine, you know, and then you'd feel the little bump when you pressed a button or, you know, the capacitive home button and all those sorts of things. Oh, hey, they took a page from Android again, and I liked that. I thought that was cool. They've extended some of that, but overall, the phone itself is just snappy. It's fast. The fingerprint sensor is just super, super fast.
Right. What do you think of the sound, though? I mean, the stereo sound, is it clear?
Yeah,
is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. And unlike what Apple did, where they like have the speaker, like the earpiece speaker going up, and then like
right,
the
one
speaker
side.
In the end,
yeah.
The Pixel has...
And do that hollow cavity thingy that they do.
Yeah, but yeah, no, the Pixel has speakers at both ends, so they're both firing in the same direction, which I think helps a lot. By the way, just in case you really wanted to know, there is no headphone jack.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean I can't get around the issue? Oh, yeah, I think, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, there's no headphone jack. Remember how everyone was up in arms about Apple getting rid of the headphone jack? And I'm going to go to Google now because Apple doesn't have a headphone jack. Yeah, no headphone jack.
They have a pretty expensive dongle, too, for USB-C to 3.5.
Do they?
Because
the phone comes with one.
Yeah,
it comes with one. It comes with, actually, it comes with one of those. It comes with a USB-C to USB-C cable for the charger.
Right.
And it comes with an adapter that has like female USB, standard USB to USB-C, so that you can take your micro USB cable from your old phone and sync over your old Google phone stuff to your new Google phone.
Ooh, actually, that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. And you can actually do some of that with your iPhone. In fact, I moved my contacts and music and things like that over during the setup. And the setup is accessible. There was one inconsistency that sort of bothered me, and that is that the shortcut to turn TalkBack on and off after everything's all set up is holding down both volume buttons. But when you're in the setup, I learned later, to turn on TalkBack during the setup, you do what you did with Android 5 and before with holding your two fingers
with
on
two
the,
fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because technically once when it's installed, you're suspending and not suspending TalkBack. So when you do the volume keys, you're temporarily suspending TalkBack rather than turning it on. And there is some subtle differences. It's different than VoiceOver, where if you do a triple click, it's not there at all. In testing environments with that, if you turn it off temporarily, it does act like that, but it's still kind of a running service in the background where, you know, it's not always that way with triple click homing VoiceOver. But yeah, to initially start that, you hold the power button in and then you do the two finger split and hold it there for a couple of seconds. And then that should launch it. Now it should launch it on a Google phone. Other phones, that's not always the case.
May or may not be.
We talked about with the NVIDIA Shield.
Yeah. I think it is the case, however, on like the Motorola, the Moto, what the heck is it?
If it's a custom launcher.
The Moto G5S Plus. That's what we got. Bunch of us got my lady friend's sister a Moto G5S Plus. You know, get all the things
rolled
in.
Right off the tongue. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think that it was the same with that, but I didn't know it at the time, and I went through all sorts of gyrations to get TalkBack on, and then I suspended it thinking, oh, well, okay, it won't talk when she takes it out of the box to set it up. Because my initial plan was to set it up for her and everything, but I didn't have her Gmail credentials, and so I couldn't do it. But
right.
Yeah, so when she pulled it out of the box and it started talking, it's like, no. Okay, well, we worked with it, and she's very happy with it. But so yeah, the Moto G series is the same.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what's going on, because Google bought the HTC team that helped make the Pixel for something like $1.1 billion today or something like that. As we're about to walk in, they finalized the deal. It's almost like Motorola the next generation, right? Because that's was the dream back when I was doing Android podcasts, was that, okay, now that Google has Motorola, they control the hardware, they control the software, this is going to be the best experience ever. And that did turn out to be the case, and Motorola went off to Lenovo.
Because didn't Motorola get bought by Lenovo? Well, cell phone division.
Google sold them
Motorola
off.
Yeah.
And then...
Except for the patents, of course.
Yeah, exactly. They kept the most important part. You're right. And so they held on to these things, and there wasn't a lot of understanding what Google's play was with that, as well as where they would go next. But in the last year or two, they have really, truly decided to pull a Microsoft Surface by saying, this is the hardware you should emulate, and this is the flagship, and this is what you should be doing in order to have the best experience. And when you were asking on Twitter, what would be a good phone, what would be a good reference, I was leaning that way, because if Google can't get it right, then I can't expect Xiaomi or
right.
any other company to do that right. And I have soured on Samsung over the years because they are too fragmented in their philosophy of trying to build their own island and live on it. There was a wonderful conversation over the holidays that I had on Twitter with other people about the voice assistant talkback-esque screen reader within the Samsung community, and how, you know, some people were using it rather than, you know, real Google Talkback, and where some of the limitations lie and where some of the places it worked out really well. I would just feel more comfortable being on the Google platform, because then that way, for testing purposes, for one of the reasons why you bought this, you have an expectation of if it works, it should work, and it should work well because it's on a stock Android platform with very little other bloatware.
Right. When I got a good deal on it, I couldn't pass it up. I'm all about the good deals.
How do you feel about the weight, the size, the screen? Does it feel comfortable in
funny.
The hand?
Yeah. You know, it's very responsive. When I've played with Android phones in the past, they've always felt quite a bit less responsive. And some of that was because I got cheaper phones, but some of that, I think, was actually due to TalkBack. Like, you have to make very exaggerated, you had to make very exaggerated gestures, and they just didn't feel very responsive. But this Pixel 2 is quite responsive. Actually, so was the Motorola, the Moto G5S Plus, the little bit of time I played with it. So I was really pleased with that. The screen, it's exactly the same size as the iPhone 7, of course, without a home button. But it's exactly right. The same size, and it's thin and square and slabby, like...
Yeah, no rounded edges. Yeah.
No rounded edges.
No rounded edges. Well, does that support wireless charging? And of course, I guess rapid charging, right?
It supports rapid charging. I don't know if it supports wireless or not. I was going to ask you.
Oh, okay. I don't know off the top of my head, because I had preloaded into my head the idea about iPhone 8 charging and the like. I may hold on that.
Yeah, I just saw a deal on wireless, on key wireless chargers on like Daily Steals or something.
Yeah, they're starting to really come down in price. Belkin showed off a whole ton of them at CES. But before I even begin to venture into that, because I'm looking at the time and knowing that JJ will be climbing up the walls while listening to this particular podcast, I want to tag in Patrick and move away from Buddy Hardware to talk briefly about one of two products that he could bring to the table, but I'll let Patrick choose which one of the two projects he wishes to talk about. You got new toys too, buddy. What's going on?
I did, in fact, get new toys. As pretty much everybody around here knows, I'm into playing with audio things. So I got two interesting things. First thing I'll talk about, I'll just go over this briefly because honestly, I haven't had as much time to mess with this as I would like because of, you know, life that gets in the way sometimes. You know how that goes.
Doggone in real life IRL.
So just a couple of weeks ago, literally, I think this was announced at CES, Zoom came out with their new bottom-of-the-line recorder. Yes, that's right. I said bottom-of-the-line.
Not top-of-the-line. Right, the other side of the pyramid. Right.
No, so the new bottom-of-the-line recorder. So they've had the Zoom H1 forever, which I think this came out in 2010 or 2011, and it's a very nice, if you use it right, entry-level recording device. You've heard it all over coverage that we've done over the years. Joe has one, Ricky does.
Podcast coverage for many a year.
It's been
my trusty,
somewhere.
Dusty little recorder. Yeah, you used to use it as a sound card, bring it in on meetings. He would actually come into meetings using it. Yeah, but he did.
So they just came out with the new version of that, which is the H1N. I guess N means new. I'm not really sure. They've done this for several other products. The Zoom H1 is one of those things where if you treat it well, it works pretty good. But you really have to know You mm-hmm. have to, you know, use a windscreen even when you're inside. That's important. People don't know this sometimes because those microphones.
If you buy a Zoom H1, buy the accessory pack
almost. It's another $24, and there may be one thing in there that's worth it, and that'll totally be the windscreen.
Totally worth it.
So they came out with a new version of that, and it's interesting because it fixed a lot of my complaints about the original H1. So it's the first generation was, well, just as plastic as you could be. I mean, it's a cheap recorder, right? But everything about it is plastic. It's hollow plastic. The record button is this, you know, big giant button in the middle. It says, I am a record button. I'm going to be obvious about being a record button.
Yep.
The only other problem is, of course, if you move the unit around, you know, if you're using the recorder as they intended, it's got, you know, microphones, XY mics, you aim it at a source, the, you know, center will be right between it, and then you have a left and a right, and it's a pretty good defined stereo image. But if you're walking around and moving around, that record button actually kind of flopped around and made some noise, and that got picked up in recordings, and I've had to edit a lot of those out. Oh, yeah. Lots of that stuff has been edited out. Well, they fixed that problem. The record button is now smaller, and the whole thing is built better. So the microphones on the old one, you could actually physically move them around a little bit, which you're not supposed to do. That's not supposed to be.
You should not do that, yes, but I have. Not. Yes, this is true.
So that's better. The microphones themselves, I think, are a little bit nicer. They're not. They don't stick out quite as far. It's still got that same weird little plastic cage on top.
Cool.
It's right. You know, if you've seen the original H1
for your protection as well as the microphones.
The first time I saw the H1, the very first thing I thought was, "Oh, it's a Pez dispenser." It's
it does. Looks like he's that, absolutely doesn't it? Right.
I was like, oh, okay, so it does. So if I pop this off, does something come out? Do I get a prize? No. Well, it still kind of looks like that. It's a little fatter. It takes two AAA batteries now instead of one AA like the old one used to use, which is, I guess, why it's a little bit wider. So
ooh, two?
Yeah, so the old one took one AA. This one takes two AAAs. The old one took one.
Does it last twice as long?
No, it's still basically the same battery life as far as I can tell. But what you do get...
Same amount of recording.
No, what you do get, though, for twice that power, is you get a bunch of new features, and some of them are useful, some of them aren't. You also get a couple of accessibility concerns.
Oh, boy! All new accessibility concerns.
So what I'll say about this, and people have asked me about that, is, well, why would you use something like this over, you know, like an Olympus recorder? They talk. And, well, for the most part, they talk, they say almost everything, except for some reason, none of the recorders, I think one managed to do this, but none of them, for whatever reason, did the basic and most basic simple thing I would think, you know, that they could do is you can't hear the time as you said it on these talking recorders. I don't understand that. They're numbers. How
sure
hard
can't.
Is that?
Yeah. So yeah, mine is still like 5 years ago. My LS14 still like five years ago.
Well, you can on those recorders, you can actually set the time if you are careful. If you practice, if you count the beeps, and you happen to know that if you know what your starting year is, like, so the LS14 starts in 2012, some of the other ones start in 2009, count the beeps, they go through like, I figured out they actually go through like 2190 something, so you want to be careful about that. But
when you're in 2189, be on target. Just be aware.
Yeah,
just,
exactly. Just actually did. Yeah. I recorded some stuff and I was going by chronological and I was like, why does this say it's like 2173 or something? I figured out what that was. So a bunch of people ask me, well, why would you use something like this that doesn't talk over one of these recorders that does? And my answer is, I have used a bunch of these Olympus recorders. I just sold my LS14 in favor of the H1, and I've had the little, you know, I've used a bunch of other ones, and they're okay for what they are, but they're Neil Ewers, who of course is the guy you want to go to for, you know, blind people messing with recorders and microphones and stuff like that.
Correct.
Every, you know, well-known figure.
Right. And you took this into the bathroom and recorded water, so I know you're good.
Right.
Now, see, here's the thing. The garbage disposal is a really awesome SPL test. So
that's true.
He got it right, I think, where he says what Olympus does is it's a high-end dictation recorder. Olympus is known for being the people you go to for cameras and dicta machines. They still actually do analog dicta machines, I think. like real
that is a scary based thought. On
tape.
Wow.
I think they still do that. And so they never quite moved into the quote unquote professional market as much as they say they have. They have some weird compromises that even these other cheaper devices don't necessarily have. So with the H1, there are the original H1, as opposed to the H1N, there are three switches on the back. Joe will remember some of these good old days some of those switches got tripped and I got mad because bad things happened.
I remember those.
So they removed...
Intentionally or unintentionally, yes. They were flipped.
So they removed those switches. They replaced them with multifunction buttons on the front. This is both a good and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it allows for the ability to not accidentally trip these. And they did a thing that I really like. If you press one of these buttons once, nothing will happen, which is great because, you know, even if the buttons are unlocked, you won't accidentally like change your file type or turn a limiter on or something that you didn't mean to. It's bad because you can't see what you've changed. In all but one case, it's not a problem because when you turn like the base roll-off switch on the old H1, it was on or it was off. Those were your two options. Well, now you have four options. It's off, 80 hertz, 120 hertz, 160 hertz, off, and it wraps around. Oh, yeah, everything wraps on this thing. So that's a bit of a problem.
Do we know if it's text, like we could read it with Seeing AI?
I haven't been able to read it with Seeing AI yet. That doesn't mean it can't be done, but I haven't gotten it to work.
Okay. I'm afraid it's like symbolic where it's just like, you know, a bar graph or something.
No, it's like text. It's got a 1.5 something inch display, so it actually has text on it.
Oof. Okay.
So you can hear those changes if you're monitoring with headphones, like when you turn the limiter on and off, when you turn auto level on and off, you can hear all that stuff. That's great. The one thing where it's a bit of a problem is when you change file formats, and that's done with another button right on the far left of the display, and you just press the button and you keep pressing it until you get the one you want, which is not really the best way to do that. And if you don't happen to know where you were and you don't know where you're going, Pretty much the only way to tell if you can't read the display is to pop your card in and figure out what format you just recorded in and then go, oh, I need to go five more clicks up from here.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And it's like...
But at least it remembers it. It remembers it.
But the thing is and people are like, why would you put up with that? You know, you have these things, they talk, and I'll just go back to, well, I've been doing this for years before stuff talked, and it's not... It's one of those things where you could say, well, you know, it's not really progress if you're doing that, right? But... And everything should be accessible and cool and all that. Well, not everything's going to be.
It's a quality issue, though, man. It's that and the quality of Zoom has been
exactly. I was going to say that. I'll put up with a little bit of stupid for a better quality. As far as I can, you know, for what I do, if it's not completely usable, if I can get it to do what I want and it's better than the alternatives, because there are plenty of things out there, you know, that, you know, where you would say, oh, well, it's an accessible thing, and a lot of people go, oh, accessible, that means it's not as functional, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you can get into that argument. Inexpensive. The original Zoom H1 has started to drop in price dramatically. I've seen it as low as $69.
Yeah, if you can find them, they're going fast.
Yeah, Best Buy had a big blowout on them just the other day. But if you're looking for the N, if you can find one, because those two are being bought up left, right, and center. We're looking at $119. Did it come with a windscreen or is there an accessory pack or will
there is an accessory pack, but you know, for $119, you know, the old Zoom H1 at least came with a micro SD card. This thing came with a box and a manual.
Oh, how nice.
And, that's about it.
No cords, no nothing. Just
didn't come with a card.
You knew what you got when you paid for it.
You did get a crappy little slip cover thing that's made out of cloth that you rip just about when you take it out. So I mean, it's worth it for that, right?
Wait.
Oh, it did come with batteries. I'm sorry, batteries were included. So you get that.
Alrighty.
AAA batteries.
Definitely a strike in the right opinion. And you're still mounting it on the drive. You can still do that.
That's another thing. They added another, you could sort of kind of do this if you were careful with the old one. Yes, it's a regular drive, but you can also hook it up to your iPhone or your iPad and use it as a stereo microphone on that.
Through a lightning cable or how do we do this?
So if you have an Android phone that can do hosting or an Android device, you can, you know, just plug your cable in. Like if you have an OTG cable, it's micro USB, not mini.
Right.
So you plug your cable in and tell it that you want it to be an audio device, and that works. If you have an iPhone, it has a special mode that it goes into for iDevices.
Okay.
So you plug your camera, if you have the camera connection kit.
The camera kit.
You plug that in, okay. And then you take a regular micro USB cable, plug it in, and you go into this mode, which uses, instead of pulling power from the phone, it uses the batteries while it's a sound device. And that is, they do that, so you can run it on pretty much any iPhone, and it won't sip your battery more than it needs to. It's very power efficient, so long as your batteries are good. Well, I've talked about it for a while, and here's an actual audio sample of the Zoom H1N with its built-in microphones. I'm not going to do anything particularly in-depth, because this isn't that kind of show, but I can at least knock a bottle over. That's not good. Off the dresser in the bedroom. Well, that's great. Now I have to go pick that up. Well, hey, now you have the idea that that bottle fell off to my left and behind me a little bit. Or at least you will if you're listening on something that's stereo. So over here is the left, and over here is the right, and this is the relative center. Now, just for you, Joe, I'm going to go in the bathroom and run some water. And now for the final part of this test, I'll flush the toilet. All right. Now, I'll go back in the bedroom and see if I can find that bottle that I knocked off. Oh, there it is. I almost tripped over it. All right, I'll just put that back there and in this recording.
Interesting. Okay, well, that sounds like it's really cool. It's something that I know I'll be getting. We'll see if I get it before San Diego. I saw Shelly told us she got an H6.
Oh, she got an H6. Yeah, I've had one of those for about 5 years. That I wouldn't go anywhere without, because it's just so versatile and cool and also not really accessible, but you know.
I remember when Derek Lane showed me that he had gotten it, like when it first came out, and then he showed me the modules, which I thought were just crazy. But that is a very common recorder that a lot of podcasters use for field recording, is the Zoom H6. So if you're thinking about upping your podcasting game, and we get this question a lot on Twitter and elsewhere, what do we use? How do we use it? But just know that having that tool is just the first step. The main thing is you got to have good content. But the second thing is you got to control your room noise. You got to pay attention to where your hand is. You got to pay attention to where your space is, how you record, where
and
you record.
And then you have to have a directional mic from across the room.
That sounds like half the podcasts that come in with people on Macs. Yep. I've seen that once or twice on just a few podcasts. So those are just some ideas going into this. You want to save your number two for next time?
Yeah, because we're running a little long. Yeah, I suppose, because it does. Yeah, I could get a little bit long, and we're already going over. So
yeah,
but
Jay would be very upset.
Sorry,
with
JJ, brevity's never been my strength.
I'm pretty good at making him that way, though.
And,
I will talk about iPhone 8 chargers at some point too. That was my backup, just in case we didn't run long. The other thing is, I'm going to have at the very bottom last word. The last word is a really interesting look at four chords and how prevalent they are in popular music. You might have just heard the Grammys recently.
And are we going to do Axis of Awesome?
Lack of there's a lack that this video mentions that the lack of diversity in music. It was just kind of
what is it like? EACD and that's it.
And the golden ratio. This clip actually uses the Inception song "Time" and some others, and then actually relates that down all the way to Chopin
or so just Nickelback.
There's a never a time for that. And so this is an interesting link that I have at the bottom of the show notes that is a really well laid out musical explanation from a guy who actually did some learning on the music and explains why that is, how it happens, and why you get certain chills when you hear music because of the buildup and then these notes that work all too well. Buddy, where can people find you when they are not able to find you on this particular podcast? Where can they go to hear your words of wisdom, my friend?
People can find me at Taco Bell eating Taco Bell French fry nachos Bel Grande.
Oh, no, I'm going to have to. Ricky started a carb-free diet. No, I can't mention this. No, it's bad enough she already thinks that I want to plan the wedding there.
Yeah, oh, well, you know, I mean, yeah, you'll have to sneak off and get some. They, you know, actually, it was last Thursday. Was that when it was? Taco Bell introduced nacho fries, but you can get them
nacho fries.
Yeah, you can get them with either Nacho Supreme or Nachos Bel Grande. Toppings. So you get your friend instead of nacho chips, you get French fries.
You mentioned the flaming hot Cheeto bites at Burger King, I had to go out and get those for Ricky. They were the mac and cheese flaming hot Cheeto bites that were at Burger King. And then somebody, Jane Saw, actually wrote me and said she wished I hadn't mentioned the Chips Ahoy cereal that's at Walmart because she went and got the Nutter Butter cereal and some others. So why get Cookie Crisp when you can get actual cookies
as a
breakfast cereal?
Yes. Cookie. Well, you know, this is back to the Bill Cosby cake for breakfast thing, remember?
Yes, exactly. Dad is great eating the chocolate cake. Yes,
so yeah. True. But no, the Nachos Bel Grande fries are fantastic. By the way, you can also get French fries for a limited time in pretty much anything you want. If you want it like the California style burrito, you can get the French fries in your double XL.
Oh yeah, the double XL burrito. Yeah, the seven layer
grill blah blah thingy burrito.
Yeah, or add them to your breakfast. That would be the best.
Them to your breakfast.
Anyway, so people can find you where?
If I'm not at Taco Bell, you can find me on Twitter at bbrannan, B-B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
Oh, so you don't tweet at Taco Bell. Okay.
He might. It's all entirely possible. But he does some other podcasts and thingies too, so a great resource and a great reference for information about guide dogs and other things. He is a good person to have in your tweet feed if you didn't have him already.
I have been known to occasionally show up on iAccessibility, and
that's true.
Actually, Aaliyah's got a new guide dog podcast. Pawedcast. Which
nice.
I'm occasionally on as well. So, find me there.
Cool. You can always find more excellent deals for this very program over at blindbargains.com. Remember, you can also find us over at twitter.com/blindbargains. JJ usually runs that particular account. You can also find a lot of stuff about what I talk about, mainly food and technology and occasionally
and Doctor Who.
Over at twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word. And then Patrick, should people follow you?
I don't know if it's a good idea. I mean, you can if you want, I guess.
If you learn all about your streams.
Yes, if you decide to do such things, I'm at Boris in a Box on Twitter. That's 2 R's, not one, because only 1 R is boring. So that's BORRIS in a Box on Twitter.
And if you follow all three of us, you'll actually see banter between those of us, especially those in the BBQ crew. We have a tendency to crosstalk on Twitter. JJ should be back with us, being that he survives Washington Seminar and ATIA and doesn't bring home any nasty bugs from the trips. It's entirely possible these days, as you know, stay safe with the flu season. And also remember, you can learn more about the Polaris by heading on over to HIMS-INC.com. HIMS is our sponsor for this program, and we definitely thank them for their support. Stay tuned. They should have something very interesting coming up. Is it going to be at ATIA? Is it going to be at CSUN? I don't know. We'll just have to see. In the meantime, if you get a chance, HIMS-INC.com. That's going to do it for this particular episode, buddy. Thanks for coming on and talking about all the cool stuff you got. We're had to have you on again sometime, my friend.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And remember, you can rate us over at all the cool places, such as the Google Play Store, over there at the iTunes Store, or whatever we're going to call it, because I hear iBooks is now just going to be called Books. So
when are they going to rename the iPhone to just Phone?
Phone. You know, get rid of all the eye branding. It's just poke out all the eyes. And that's going to do it for us. We will see you on episode 133. Thanks for listening, everyone.
See.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2018.